Welcome to the Nobody Guide to Life, where we provide tips and tools for personal growth, personal development, and your spiritual journey that you can use right now in your everyday life. I'm J.A. Plosker. You can always find out more at thenobodyguidetolife.com. Thank you for joining us. Now, I've had a few careers in my time. I've been a lawyer, I've been a teacher, a social work counselor, and more, and each time I made a move, I knew that somehow, even if it wasn't obvious at the time, the change was meant to be, that the change was part of a path leading me to my destiny. Changes like that can take our lives in new directions. And sometimes, well, changes like that can transform others' lives as well. My guest today has been through those profound changes, and he has now dedicated his life to helping others. Early in life, Jeff Raisley was an adventurer, but in his 20s and 30s, he devoted himself to a career in law and business to support his family. When he hit his 40s, he began what he calls his midlife crisis. His wife suggested trekking the Himalayas on the Mount Everest Base Camp Trail. Adventure was back until tragedy struck on an expedition, an avalanche that killed three Nepalese porters. Jeff again started to rethink his life, and he decided to combine adventure with development work in remote Nepalese villages. Jeff founded the Basa Village Foundation to build schools and hydroelectric systems, as well as improve educational opportunities in Nepal. Jeff's written over 70 articles and 10 books, including Bringing Progress to Paradise, What I Got from Giving to a Village in Nepal, and he wants to help others discover what it takes to live a meaningful life. Welcome to the show, Jeff.
Thank you, J.A. Glad to be with you.
Well, this is quite a story, and you've had so many different transitions in your life, and I'd like to know more about that journey. How did you get from the law to the Himalayas to where you are now?
Well, like you mentioned, I turned 40. I was manifesting midlife crisis symptoms, and life was very busy. I was the head of a small law firm, two kids, just all the typical financial work responsibilities that an American lawyer has. And one day I came home from the office and my wife slapped a brochure down on the table in front of me and said, "Why don't you go do this?" And it was a brochure about trekking in the Himalayas. She was saying, you know, get over this midlife crisis.
Right.
And her therapy was go take a hike on the other side of the world. and it was great therapy. So I did it. And that started, as you put it, a new transition in life.
So so you took a break from in your 20s and 30s, you said you were into all of that. And what prompted you? You said you took that break to take care of other responsibilities. What did that feel like when you lost that adventure the first time around? Was that kind of what you were feeling returning in your midlife? What took you on that first transition?
Well, I think really sort of the typical American experience of embedding myself in family and career. I had been very happy, although I was married, living in apartments, not feeling, you know, really tied to the ground,
right.
Feeling like we could move anytime we wanted. And my wife was in around 30, had gotten the nesting instinct, wanted a house, wanted kids. And I sort of reluctantly went along with that. And at the same time, my career trajectory as a lawyer was getting more heavy,
right,
in the sense of I was, you know, developing a successful practice, growing a small firm. And so my feeling was I just couldn't take the time to go off on adventure travel, at least nearly as much as I had accustomed to in my late teens and into my 20s.
So when you finally got back to it and your wife gave you this amazing gift to go to the other side of the world, talk to us about the expeditions then that happened over there that led you to this new chapter?
Well, the first time I went was with a trekking group, and we trekked along the Mount Everest Base Camp Trail. And growing up in the Midwest, I wasn't that familiar with mountains. I mean, you know, I'd driven across the Rockies and across the Appalachians before, and had actually done a motorcycle trip through the Appalachians. But being up in the highest mountains in the world with these majestic snow-capped peaks just awed me. And the other thing that really impressed me was the people who live up in the Himalayas were, as Sir Edmund Hillary described them, the strongest and the kindest people in the world.
Right.
And I just, I was really inspired, moved by these people. Their very simple way of life, yet they had a spiritual quality to them, and they were very kind and incredibly physically strong in the sense of being able to endure hardship.
Right. So when you were there, you had this disastrous expedition, and I want to know more about that, because sometimes we go on these treks, we go on these adventures, and like we said in the opening, they don't always go as we plan. And we have changes, we have shifts, but the shift that happened to you was tragic. And I'd like to know more about that and what effect that had on you and how that changed the course of your life.
Well, after that first trek, I decided I wanted to become a climber.
Okay.
And not just hike along the trails.
Right.
So I went through a couple climbing courses out at Seneca Rock, West Virginia, and then went on my first actual Himalayan mountaineering expedition. Had a really, really tough experience,
right,
but it was wonderful at the same time. So I did a few more of those. And then on the fourth mountaineering expedition was when we were hiking out from base camp to get back to the airstrip where we could fly back to Kathmandu. There were three Nepalese porters who were taking a dangerous shortcut. They weren't our porters. They were from another climbing group.
Right.
And they were up on a high ridge above us, an avalanche occurred and it swept them away and they died. We ran and escaped most of it. We were just kind of covered with spindrift, but our guys, our porters, were trapped on the other side of the avalanche, and our sirdar, which is the term for the chief guide, made this amazing heroic rescue of those guys, and we all made it safely back to Lukla, which is where you fly out of the Khumbu region where the high mountains are in Nepal. But it was it made me rethink whether this type of adventure was really appropriate, because these guys died carrying the gear for their Western clients,
right,
trying to get their gear back to the airstrip before they did, and were sort of, lending an extra level of service by taking that risky route. But at the same time, every single mountaineering expedition, the porters were risking their own lives just to give us this cool adventure. So I thought, I'm not going to do this again. This is ethically wrong.
Right.
But in 2003, it was the 50th anniversary of the first summit of Mount Everest, which was in 1953. And Sir Edmund Hillary and the King of Nepal invited all Himalayan mountaineers to come back to the country. The country was going through a civil
right.
war. Tourism had dropped off, and it was really suffering. So I decided I would go back and just trek around, meet some of the Hillary clan and old mountaineers and write an article about it. So that's what I did. And it turned me into kind of again, another transition, which I call philanthro-trekking, which is combining trekking, mountaineering with doing development projects to help lift up the standard of living of mountain villagers.
So the effect that that must have had on you, I'm wondering about the spiritual also transformation that it had on you, because it certainly had a profound effect on your life. And this philanthro trekking is really interesting, and we're going to talk about that in a minute. But talk to us a little bit about the spiritual impact that something like that event has on a person. That it's something that most of us can't or will never be able to understand. It's such a unique and tragic experience. Can you talk to us a little bit about that?
One of the effects it had is after I was back home, maybe 6 weeks later, I was just driving home from the office after a normal day at work, and all of a sudden, tears just started pouring out of my eyes, and I was trembling. I had to pull over the side of the road, and I realized that I was suffering a pretty mild form of PTSD. So what that did is it made me or led me to introspect more deeply into, you know, why I was feeling this way, and what did it really mean that these guys had died in the way they had. And that's what led me to first conclude I shouldn't do this anymore. And then eventually, over time and with that experience, to develop the philanthro trekking approach. But in terms of just on the spiritual level, I guess what I would say is it was that need to become more introspective and really figure out who I was in the context of the life I was living and how what I did affected other people. And also my family was brought into this in the sense of, you know, should I continue doing these sort of risky adventures with two boys now? Should I be risking my life to, you know, just to have a cool, adrenaline high kind of adventure when I had these two boys that I was raising along with my wife? And so, which again led me to think I just needed to make this a more meaningful experience than just motorcycling trips and scuba diving and rock climbing and that kind of thing. And that would make it more worthwhile. And so I, you know, in this, when you say spiritual, you know, that evokes in a lot of minds a sort of, you know, connection with God and the universe and some kind of cosmic sort of quality. And I do think that's certainly one aspect of it. But another aspect of it is, how are you, you as you are, the life you're living, affecting those in your world? And that was really the level of spirituality that really, I think, it led me to a deeper understanding.
So that, you know, it's interesting because it's so every day in terms of how it impacts your everyday life, but it's so profound in the directions that it can lead you to when you have things like that in your life that are so emotional. And I'm curious, your book, Bringing Progress to Paradise, those changes you went through that you say prompted this philanthro trekking pursuit, take us back to that village now through your eyes. Take us back to that village with those experiences you had, that new understanding you have, and how it led you to transform your own life and maybe the lives of these villagers. What happened next when you went back there?
After I decided that I would continue going back to Nepal and allowing myself to stay in contact with this country and these people that I had really come to love, I decided every time I went back, I would do some kind of philanthropic project. And so in 2006, I employed, because by then I was organizing and leading trekking and mountaineering expeditions. In 2006, I employed a new company, outfitter company that I hadn't used before. And it turned out the owner of the company and all the guys in our staff, the porters, cook, guides, all came from this one little village called Bassa. And they told me that they had a little village school with three grades. They wanted to add a fourth and a fifth grade. And after we got to know each other and felt comfortable enough, you know, walking with people for 3 weeks in the Himalayas, you get to know each other pretty well. They asked me if I could raise $5,000, which then that could be used to buy the materials, to add two classrooms, and to pay the salaries of a fourth and fifth grade teacher.
Right.
So I agreed to do that. And after raising the $5,000, I went back and with a few other friends trekked to Bassa Village to, you know, hand over the money and see what the village was like, because I hadn't been there. And it was one of the most marvelous experiences of my entire life. When we arrived, the villagers were all waiting for us, about 250 people, and literally covered us in flowers. Wow. Every family wanted to host us in their homes. We were plied with food and roxy, which is their local, you know, house brew.
Right.
And it was just this amazing experience of this whole village just being so grateful for, you know, $5,000.
Right. Right.
So after that, I have gone back to the village six times. That inspired me to create a foundation, and we've built another school, hydroelectric project, a water system, medical clinic, so on and so forth, doing what Nehru, who is the owner of Adventure Geotrekking Company, he and I developed this philosophy of philanthropy, which we called culturally sensitive development.
Right.
And so our idea was the village itself should decide how it wanted to change, if at
right.
all, and then to tell us, and then how we might cooperate with the village to bring about any of those changes, which are basically infrastructural development.
Right.
And so that, you know, that became a big part of my life since then.
How has that affected you now back home? Because, you know, sometimes it seems like, you know, these projects are so far away and they're so distant. But of course, from the spiritual perspective, they're right here. They're right with us. And so how have those projects and those events over there, how have they come home with you now in your daily life that you live today?
Well, one thing is my wife and I get to enjoy wonderful Nepali tea all the time because my friends there have given me so much tea. I have a lifetime supply, and so we appreciate that. And my house is decorated with Tonka paintings.
Wow.
I mean, it's almost like you're walking out of the Midwest into a Nepali home.
Wow.
But my wife has never been to Nepal, probably will never go, lives through me somewhat vicariously. And I give talks regularly to civic groups and churches and around Indianapolis, sometimes even up into Chicago, promoting our projects and just raising people's awareness about the situation in Nepal, and also inviting Americans to go and experience it by trekking or climbing. And so it's become kind of a regular feature of my ordinary life.
Right. I'm sure in those audiences, have you seen ways that your stories have changed people's perspectives on things when you share these stories and bring them to people? What's the feedback that you get about how it's changed people's points of view?
Well, one thing that's amazing and wonderful, Americans are criticized for a lot of things, but Americans are wonderfully generous.
Right.
And many times I've gone to a Kiwanis club or a Rotary club or a church or a bookstore, and people who knew very little about Nepal, saw the slideshow I showed, heard me talk about this little village on the other side of the world, and wanted to give, wanted to donate money that they had worked hard for and earned, just to help these folks that they would never experience other than through pictures,
right,
on the other side of the world. The other thing that's been interesting is people who decide that, wow, I want to experience that, and are willing to take a few weeks out of their life, because it's really an absolute minimum is 2 weeks.
Right.
And 3 weeks is really, you can have a much better trekking experience with that amount of time and a few thousand dollars to experience the culture and see the majesty of the vistas that I describe in my pictures show. So, that's kind of the most concrete impacts that I experience. But the other thing is, back on a spiritual level, something that strikes people is the simple and beautiful way that these people live.
Right.
In Basa Village, everyone is either a farmer, a blacksmith, a tailor, or a teacher at the school.
Right.
And they're so grounded in life and in relationships, because they don't have TV, radio. There was no vehicle with wheels, not even bicycles,
right,
in the village when I was first going there. Now, after years, fortunately, unfortunately, a road has finally reached the village. Cell phone coverage reached the village last year. So there will be changes that come with that. But I was there last year. The character of the village is still very much the same. You meet somebody and you say, hey, there's a sangha over there, and this person, Nehru, let's say, can relate five generations of Sangha's people back, because everyone in the village knows each other so deeply. Because when you don't have all of these distractions, personal relationships are so much more important.
Right, right. Absolutely. And I love that message of simplicity, because it, without distraction, there's more room to remember five generations back. So, Jeff, what's a tip or two from your journeys that you can give to us that can help us on our journeys of personal and spiritual growth?
A message that I try to get across to all ages, but especially to younger people, is to approach life as an adventure and as a work of art. In my teens, I decided that I didn't want to live just a normal life. I wanted to experience the world, to put myself into situations where I would be tested,
right,
mentally, physically, spiritually. But I also wanted to approach life as a creative, artistic process.
Right.
And so that's, I mean, in a way, it's, I don't know, it sounds kind of trite maybe, but I also think there's meaning to living adventurously, but creatively, so that your life is a developing work of art.
Well, I think that's absolutely beautiful. And I think that's wonderful advice. And it really gets us, I think, to be a little more mindful and to reflect on how the adventures we take can improve our lives, but also how they affect the lives of other people that we know. So I really appreciate you sharing that. And that brings us to the end of this episode of the Nobody Guide to Life. Jeff, thank you so much for being on the show and sharing your stories. We really appreciate it.
Oh, Jay, I'm delighted that you asked me. It's been a wonderful experience talking to you.
Well, I appreciate it. Your story is quite inspiring. And I want to remind our listeners, the road of personal and spiritual growth is full of trails to blaze, mountains to climb. And sometimes it doesn't go as we planned or go where we planned, but something can come out of that, something that can teach us even when it seems so much is lost. Be open to new places, new people, new experiences. Be respectful and helpful to others on their journey. And of course, be open to learning a little bit about yourself on the adventure. You can find out more about Jeff and his work and his story and his foundation and his selection of books, including Bringing Progress to Paradise, at jeffreyraisley.com. The link will be in our show notes. And you can always check out more episodes at thenobodyguidetolife.com. Reach out to us on Twitter and Facebook at Nobody's View or on Instagram at J.A. Plosker, or join our Facebook community, Simple Spirituality. If you liked what you heard on this episode, please consider sharing it with someone you know. Keep practicing and have a good week.